how should companies really truly step back and not look at headlines and really think about how cyber affects your organization?
They don't think that their stuff is a target.
That's a business killer.
We talk about cybercrime as though it doesn't happen to real people. Hooded hackers, backlit by neon green ones and zeros. A data war, waged without words on a dark stage that will never darken our door. But the reality of cybercrime hits much closer to home. And for one small Midwestern manufacturing company, the threat walked right in through the front door. This is the Cybercrime Lab, a podcast about true cybercrime stories, the impact on victims, and what businesses can do to protect themselves and their customers. And if you think you're not at risk, that is exactly where attackers want you to be.
In my experience, it only takes hearing what these attacks are like a few times to realize you need to prepare yourself for what could be a business-ending experience.
That's Andy Anderson, the founder and CEO of DataStream Insurance. For over a decade, Andy has been working with victims of cybercrime. He's seen firsthand the human impact of a cyber attack. Now, he's on a mission to shed light on the threats we all face from a world we can't see. Today's guest is James Turgle, the vice president at Optiv, a leader in cyber advice and solutions. However, before becoming a VP, James had spent 22 years in the FBI. It seems unbelievable now, but in the 90s, cybercrime was a new problem, and James was one of the agents tasked with starting a cyber task force.
So I've been working cyber since the inception of the FBI's program into cyber, and the FBI really started our cyber division during that time frame when they knew cyber was going to be a part of every case that we worked. I moved throughout my career, was the special agent in charge of our Arizona field office, was then named as the chief human capital officer or the head of HR by then Director Mueller, and then Director Comey at the time named me the executive assistant director for global information and technology and the FBI's chief information officer or CIO.
Long story short, this man understands cyber the way Stan Getz understood the saxophone. Andy has invited James to the Cybercrime Lab to share a case from his time in the FBI, where the least likely victim fell prey to a malicious insider in one of the biggest cybercrime organizations in the world.
I think for folks who haven't been living in the cybercrime world every day, like, there was a particular case that we might have wanted to spend some time on, not so much the stuff that often is hitting the headlines, the big national cases, but ones that are more applicable to small and medium-sized businesses.
It's a great story because the moral of it really provides an idea of how you should think about cyber. How should companies really truly step back and not look at headlines and really think about how cyber affects your organization? So the case is a real FBI case. It was a Midwestern manufacturing company. I would consider it in the small to medium size. They had a particular type of intellectual property they built. They wanted to hire a network engineer, network specialist. So their marketing folks, their HR folks went out on social media. But what are they doing? They're talking about the company, and they're using Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all of these social media platforms to recruit at local universities in their area. They get four great candidates, four just amazing candidates out of these universities. They whittle that down to one particular applicant who was just a rock star, right? He interviewed well, he was thinking about things and talking to them about areas that they wanted to go in their manufacturing business. And so they hired him. So he gets in there, rolls up his sleeves. He becomes that go-to guy. They really want him to help them move their manufacturing process, make it leaner and meaner and more efficient and more productive. And he's got great ideas about that. And so what do? They give him privileged access to everything, right? Now he has access to all the databases. He has access to all the networks. And 18 months later, he exfiltrates all of that intellectual property out to the Chinese government. So in essence, he was a Chinese intelligence officer planted one of the local universities in order to get this particular intellectual property. And the intellectual property I'm talking about here, it's not national security level. It's not something that, you know, is used in the defense industrial base. It's a small to medium sized, very unique company.
Yeah. And I think that's what's amazing. Most of these companies who, if they're not doing stuff for defense, or they don't think that their stuff is a target.
I've worked the Chinese, the Russians, the North Koreans, some Iran-based cases. And certain nation states have, you know, very specific motivations as to why they're doing what they're doing. China takes a very long, what I would consider a very long-range approach. And they have what they call their five-year technology refresh plan.
In 1953, Mao Zedong, chairman of the Communist Party in China and founder of the People's Republic of China, issued the first five-year refresh plan, which set the stage for Chairman Mao's Great Leap Forward in 1958, a rapid and reckless shift from an agrarian to an industrial-based economy. The end of China's second five-year refresh plan would come at the cost of more than 15 million lives and the deadliest famine of human history. On March 13, 2021, China's National People's Congress approved the country's 14th five-year refresh plan. 19 chapters, 65 sub-chapters, with 20 leading economic and social development indicators, all to be refreshed in 5 years.
They want to refresh critical technology that they choose the areas on every 5 years. Look around the world. There's very few organizations that can actually refresh an entire technology base within that five-year period. So what does the Chinese do? They do it the old-fashioned way and they steal it.
If they would be willing to go after this organization, is there anything that's off the table?
No, absolutely not. They're going to try to suck up every piece of intelligence that they can out there, or all this information. And if they don't use it today, tomorrow, or a year from now, that's fine. It doesn't necessarily have to be used immediately. They're actually in it for the very long term. So this is truly an economic espionage case that was operated by a Chinese intelligence officer, but it presented itself to the company as an insider risk and an insider threat.
Okay, so this person who seems like an amazing employee is there for 18 months. And then how did they discover that this happened?
Yeah, so it was actually over probably a 2 or 3 day period. The employee doesn't show up. They're running a regularly scheduled audit of their internal networks and systems. They see that all of this data has been copied and downloaded. They had the tools in place to monitor what was going on their networks, but they really weren't looking at it. They had those tools, but they weren't paying attention to it, which unfortunately is usually the case. When you do the forensics examination and you got all these red flags, but you didn't know what you didn't know at the time.
Yeah, like the alarms are going off, but no one's there to hear them.
Correct.
Kind of, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And then because they know it goes back to the access that they had given him, they start trying to find him. He's not answering any of his phones. And literally, he's gone. He's out of the country. Rightly so. As quick as they did, probably within the first, I think, 48 hours, they called the FBI, the local FBI field office, and explain what was going on. And we had a cyber response team on the ground there within another day or half a day to stop the bleeding.
That's another kind of whole aspect to this. Calling the FBI and having a relationship with the FBI is not something, regardless of what that relationship looks like, it's not something most people think they need or have. But I would love for you to talk about how the FBI works with the private sector. And it sounded like the CISO of this organization was a part of InfoGuard.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think the FBI, and I did this when I was the cyber supervisor out in Cincinnati, we spend a lot of time doing the whole public-private outreach. So we have organizations, as you mentioned, InfoGuard, and that's an FBI public-private partnership, but we bring CISOs and CIOs, chief security officers, into this kind of data sharing association. One, it gives you access to intelligence on how to protect yourself that most people don't have access to, or certainly don't know that's out there. But it gives you this relationship with the local cyber squad and the local cyber supervisor. We know that there's data movement here. in larger amounts than is normal, and actually going out and doing that notification. So that's a really bad day for a CISO or a CIO, right? When the FBI calls him and says, hey, I think you need to look at this because we think there's a problem. You should be able to know what's going on your networks, know what normal is. But then if you see anomalous behavior, make that phone call, because guess what? There's probably 15 other cases that the FBI is working or more where this type of situation is occurring. And so, right, you see it from your own company myopic view as a victim. Well, the FBI sees it from all the victim's viewpoint. There's nuances that they're getting from individual cases that are probably connected to the same threat actors that can help you stop the bleeding, that can help you mitigate this response.
Does a local police department ever get involved in these, or is that not usually?
No, not usually. These types of investigations, if you're talking about it from a criminal investigative standpoint, right, that's going to be the FBI or that's going to be the Secret Service. Let's say you're the victim of ransomware and you've now paid the ransom in Bitcoin. It's the ability to claw that back from a response and a resilient standpoint, right? Local police agencies are not able to do stuff like that.
Yeah. What is the sort of threshold where maybe FBI or Secret Service is going to want to be involved and can be helpful? I mean, there must be sort of like below this line, like there's just too much. I think the cybercrime report from the FBI last year had something like 700,000 incidents.
To be precise, 791,790 incidents were reported in 2020, a 69% increase from the previous year, in what the FBI has called an internet crime spree. And all of this represents only a part of what the FBI combats through criminal and cyber investigations each year.
How do you think through that line?
So there's two ways to look at this. There's the fact that you're going to be able to hopefully have that relationship with the local cyber squad. But remember, that local cyber squad connects back to the FBI cyber division back in Washington. And all the intelligence of all the cases worked across the country, that cyber supervisor has access to. So there's a whole wealth of information that can be gleaned from that.
I live in the West, and I almost equate it to we're in the midst of a wildfire from a cyber attack. And unfortunately, we're at a place where like the resources are not enough to protect all the homes. And what you're seeing is that essentially some particularly insurance role has been to essentially pay for and release private fire companies that are going and protecting individual properties, clearing brush, doing all the things that they need to do because the governmental resources are just overwhelmed. And there are all kinds of issues of fairness that are involved in that. I'm not in the game of figuring out fairness. I'm in the game of making sure that businesses are protected, particularly small to medium-sized businesses, where often this isn't like CEO didn't get a bonus. It's people are losing jobs. Businesses are going out of business.
The majority of that is done in the private sector. It's done by companies like Optiv and others. Data is really critical from the FBI's viewpoint. But from the business standpoint, right, if you're a victim of a ransomware, you're not making money, your business is compromised, and you need to stop the bleeding and you need to get back to business and get back to work. And there's another case that I was involved in that was kind of tells a great story here as well. It was a pharmaceutical company. They were the victim of an attack. I'm in there and I'm interviewing the CEO and the CIO. And you know, I interview the CIO and ask him, you know, a lot of questions, but one particular, like, what is the most important information? What's the keys to the kingdom? What are the crown jewels that you as the CIO are protecting in this organization? And he says, we're a pharmaceutical company. It is the formularies and this stuff is locked away over here. It's segmented, it's air gapped. So yes, the CEO, that very same question. The CEO looks at me and says, look behind you. And he points to a building out the window. He said, you know what's in there? There's a nuclear reactor in there. We make nuclear medicines. Information that gets out in the wild, the ability to either corrupt that nuclear reactor or somehow corrupt the medicines that we're making in that nuclear reactor, that's a business killer, right? We're done. We are out of business if that gets compromised and gets out in the wild. I tell that story because you have two brilliant individuals that are really good at what they do, both the CIO and the CEO, but they didn't think about that question on the same page. They looked at it from their own chair. And this has to be a holistic conversation that is had from the mailroom to the boardroom, boardroom to the mailroom. You really need to start thinking more broadly about the impact on the business from loss of that data.
That was awesome. Having seen the cases that you've seen, what do you wish the business owner and the CIO and the folks who've been fortunate enough to not yet have to live through one of those? What do you wish that they knew, like, oh my God, today, do these three things?
Andy, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And I don't care what industry you're in, it is just a question of when. And so the two or three things that I really try to impart, especially on boards, to boards of directors and CIOs and CISOs, is know what's normal on your networks. Companies have so many tools that are providing so much data that it gets lost in the noise. Bring a third party in who can do a cyber readiness assessment or a ransomware readiness assessment. Companies who have done that before, had the readiness assessments, they still become victims at times. But the time it takes for them to understand what's going on, to recognize it, to respond to it, and start to remediate it is tenfold faster.
It's like, your company's going to have to play the Super Bowl. You just don't know when it's going to happen. And if you knew that was going to be like this Sunday, you'd probably do a couple of things this week to get ready for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with companies in the middle of a ransomware attack where the CEO is looking around going, okay, do I need to tell the board this? What is the escalation procedures? You have to be able to have that plan in place. Because every moment that, you know, your systems are locked down or you're compromised by malware, you're losing money.
Right. And someone who even has done some of this forethought, thinking through that, you can put yourself at an incredible advantage relative to even a very sophisticated attacker.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
James, this is great. You know, I really appreciate the time. Hopefully I don't have to call you because I'm in the middle of an incident. But if I do, I know I'll be in good hands.
No, we'll take good care of you.
Cool. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cyber Crime Lab, brought to you by Datastream Insurance. When the worst happens, you're going to want the best financial, legal, and technical support to get you back up and running again. With cyber insurance from Datastream, we find the most comprehensive insurance coverage on the market alongside critical post-incident customer support. Go to datastreaminsurance.com today and see how we can help you secure your business data. That's datastreaminsurance.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. You'll find show notes and any resources mentioned at cybercrimelabpodcast.com. We hope you'll join us next episode. Until then, stay safe. More importantly, stay ready.